This is the MCrit Podcast, where we bring upstairs care downstairs. Alrighty, let's get started. So this one was a long time in coming, but every time I was about to sit down and record it, more evidence would come out that I wanted to add to the show notes, and I'd delay it another week. But we're finally ready. This is Needle versus Knife Part 2. Remember, Part 1 was my discussion with Min on whether we should be doing needle versus surgical cricothyrotomy. This one is whether we should be doing needle thoracostomy or finger thoracostomy. So Needle versus Knife Part 2. Let's get to it. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know I'm not a big fan of needle decompression or needle thoracostomy of the chest for diagnosed or confirmed pneumothorax. I think it's kind of a silly procedure. I think it goes wrong a lot, but there's still people out there that like it. And I don't have a problem with it as long as it's done properly. So that's what we're going to talk about in this show, is whether the needle or the knife is a better way to go for a confirmed pneumothorax. So the way I figured I'd go about discussing this is with three scenarios. So scenario one, you're at the CT scanner. For some reason, you didn't get a chest x-ray before you went over. And you got that CT of the head and CT of the C-spine, and you're looking at the cuts in the bottom of the C-spine CT, and all of a sudden you see, wow, there doesn't seem to be any lung tissue up there. And so you ask the CT tech to go a little bit further down on the chest and get a CT chest, and all of a sudden you notice there's an enormous tension pneumothorax on the left side of the patient's chest. And the question now becomes, what do you do? Because you look up at the vital sign monitor and the patient's blood pressure is 80 over 40 and their saturation is 74% on a non-rebreather and they're not looking too peachy anymore. So obviously you have to decompress this tension pneumothorax. How are you going to do it? You're in the CT bay. There's not a lot of equipment here. What are you going to do? This might be the best circumstance to do a needle decompression of the chest. So let's talk about that. Let's say you decide to do a needle decompression of the chest here. How do you get it done? Now, the conventional teaching is second intercostal space, which is just above the third rib. So you find the third rib, you go just above it in the midclavicular line. And if you really went there, you might be okay. But there's a number of studies showing, and I have some of them in the show notes, that most of the time what we think is the midclavicular line is actually medial to the midclavicular line. And if you're going there, there's a lot of really bad structures you could hit, like major vessels. So that's the first thing, is most people get it wrong. And when they did this nice little study that where they asked EM physicians to point on the chest where you think the right spot is, most of the time they were medial of that line and at risk of hitting really important stuff. And there's also case reports in the show notes of horrible trauma caused by these needle decompressions in the anterior location. So if you're going to do it anteriorly, you got to go to the right spot, which for me usually means lateral to the nipple or lateral to where the nipple should be if we're dealing it on a person whose nipples have kind of moved downwards as they've been aging. Or really figure out where the midclavicular line is. Now, most of the time, if you go from the sternal notch to the edge of the shoulder, you know, as far out on the shoulder as you can, you might be a little bit lateral of the midclavicular line, but you're going to be in much better shape than if you just try to guess, and you usually will find wind up too medial, and that's super dangerous. But I don't know why people go anterior in the first place. We're very experienced going laterally. And I think you should do your needle decompression, if you think it's a good idea, in the same exact spot you would do a chest tube, which is the fourth or fifth intercostal space, mid-axillary line, or a little bit lower or a little bit higher, but right around the mid-axillary line. And that just makes a lot of sense. You're familiar with it. There's a lot less you could hit there with a needle. So that's where I recommend going. Now, there's a back and forth in the literature as to whether the depth of the anterior or the lateral approach is deeper or shallower, which one's better, which one's not. Here's the take home to that, and that's point number two, is both of them will not be reached in most patients with a standard angiocath, which is what I see most people reaching for, is they grab an 18-gauge angiocath and stick that in, and they are surprised when that didn't work. You can't do that. All of them are longer than the 1 1/4, 1.5 inches of those angiocaths in most of the studies to get in either location, anterior or lateral. So I'd say go lateral, and then you can't use an 18-gauge angiocath. You need something longer. Now, the ideal is you grab one of those incredibly long 14-gauges, and you go just until you hit air. You go a little bit further in, and then you advance your angiocath, assuming there was a pneumothorax there to begin with. But those 14-gauges aren't available, at least in my trauma bay, very often. I mean, we'll see them like once every 6 months. One of them will appear. We don't know where it came from. We don't know where to put it because there's no draw for it. And so this is really not a device we have commonly available. Now, your place might be different. You might have thousands of these huge, you know, 3-inch, 3.5-inch 14-gauges just hanging around, but we don't. So what I would say is if you're going to do this, you just open up a central line kit and just use that long 18-gauge with the angiocath on top of it that's inside every central line kit. And that will work. You could attach that to a syringe and use that. And that will make a good needle decompression device. Now, that's not going to help you in the CT bay, unless your CT bay is very different than mine, because our CT bay doesn't have central line kits. In that circumstance, you use what you got, and they usually have angiocaths there. But since you know there's a tension pneumothorax there, you just saw it on the CT scan, you could keep pushing in and actually indent the skin until you get air, because you know there's air there, which is why in this circumstance, I don't have such a problem with needle decompression, because you've already made the diagnosis. You're just doing something to temporarily relieve the pressure until you get definitive management with a chest tube. And since you know the air is in that chest already, you're going to keep pushing until you find it. And even relief of just a bit of that air is enough to temporize the patient until you get them back to your trauma bay. So the take home of this first scenario is A, it might be the only time needle decompression in my mind is a good idea. If you're going to do it, I think lateral is better. Lateral is safer. Lateral is more familiar to you. If you decide to go anterior, make sure you're lateral of that midclavicular line, or for me, the nipple line. You're always lateral to the nipple line if you want to stay safe. And then keep pushing until you get air, and understand that that 1 1/4 inch or 1.5 inch angiocath is really going to be right at the border of not making it, either anteriorly or laterally. So you got to push hard and actually indent the skin a little sometimes to make that work. And if you have a morbidly obese or really bulky, muscular guy, it's not going to reach even if you indent the skin. And so that's another reason needle decompressions aren't great. They're going to fail a bunch of the time. Now, scenario number two is you're in your trauma bay. You get a chest x-ray. There's an enormous pneumothorax there. And you look up at the screen, and the vitals are kind of crappy again. Now, this is a little bit different because you're in your trauma bay. You have all the equipment in the world. And you could do a needle decompression in these patients, but I don't think you should. What I prefer in these guys is the finger thoracostomy. Now, I've mentioned this in the traumatic arrest episode, but I'm going to go in a little greater detail now because I've gotten a bunch of questions about what the finger thoracostomy really is. And essentially what you're doing is you're doing the beginning portions of a chest tube, but you're doing it much more expediently, and you're doing it without the typical fanfare that goes with chest tube placement. And let me explain what I mean. See, there's really two ways you could put a chest tube in. There's the elective chest tube, and then there's the crashing patient chest tube. And for both of them, I try to be full sterile. That's not where I'm cutting corners. The difference is, on an elective chest tube, you make a tiny little incision, and then you get a Kelly in there, and you push it in a little bit, and you spread, and you push it in a little bit, and you spread, and you push it in a little bit, and you spread, and then you give more lidocaine, and then you push it in a little bit, and you spread, and you push it in a little bit, and you spread. And it could take 5 minutes, depending on the skill level of the person doing it, before they actually puncture through to the pleural space. And then there's the crash chest tube. And a crash chest tube should be still sterile, one incision, a little more generous than the elective one, and then using a small Kelly, not the big Kelly, not the enormous Kelly, a small Kelly, or curved hemostat, whatever you have that's small and therefore pointier, you really get in there in one or two pushes. And so maybe you spread once or twice some of the muscles out. But once you're at that point where you spread the muscles once or twice, you poke through. You don't try not to poke through the parietal pleura. You could use your finger for that, but you poke through all the muscle layers, and it's just really one shot. And in adept hands, this really takes less than 5 seconds from the time you've made the skin incision to the time you get your finger in there and poke through pleura. Because essentially what you're doing is, with your dominant hand, you grab the finger holes of that Kelly, and then with your non-dominant hand, you hold towards the very front of that instrument so that if you push a little too hard, your fingers will actually stop it from going further in the chest than a centimeter or two. And then you jam in there with your body weight on the back of that device, the back of that instrument, until you poke through. So really, this is as quick as a needle once that skin incision is made. Same thing. It's pretty much one motion. If I find those small hemostats, I could poke through without any spreading at all. They are pointy. I mean, they're not sharp like they're going to cut your skin if you rub it against your arm, but you could probably make a nice little puncture wound if you gave any force against your own skin. Try it sometime. Don't blame me, though, if you do cause a laceration. But they go through really easy. And when I'm watching my residents or the surgical residents in a patient in traumatic arrest trying to put a chest tube in, and they're doing multiple spreading and it's taking them 3 or 4 minutes to get into the pleural space, I get angry, because that's not how it's done. It should take less than 5-10 seconds from the time you make that cut till the time that the tips of those devices have spread through all the muscle, and now all you have to do is stick your finger in there and break through the parietal pleura. Now, finger thoracostomy is the same as that crash chest tube. You swipe the skin with some betadine or chlorhexidine. You make an incision a little bit bigger than your finger, and not much bigger, because this can be used diagnostically as well. There's no reason to make an enormous cut. And then you take that small Kelly, or a hemostat that's curved, and you puncture through in one motion, or with one spread, and then follow it with one motion, poaching through. And then you get your finger in there, and you poke through the parietal pleura. And at that point, if there's a tension pneumothorax, the air will be released. And if you knew, since this is scenario number 2, the tension pneumothorax is there, once that is released, to some extent, the patient stabilizes. Now, you have all the time in the world to do a perfect chest tube placement. Now, the trauma team leader, if you didn't know there was a pneumothorax there, has a diagnosis. They either know that chest is clear and it's not the source of bleeding or the hypotension, or blood or air is pouring out and they know that it might be the source. That's what you need to be doing, is a rapid crash chest tube placement, only to the point where you get your finger in there. That's what a finger thoracostomy is. It really is almost as quick as putting the needle in, but much safer in my mind. Now, if there's an enormous tension pneumothorax there, like in scenario number 2, then even doing the needle decompression, again, in the lateral space with a big-sized angiocath, is probably safe as well. But why? Why do it? You don't gain anything. You might as well just do the finger thoracostomy. But if in the scenario number 2 you wanted to do a needle decompression, okay, I don't have a problem with that. But scenario number 3 is the one where I find needle decompression to be unacceptable. Scenario number 3 is when you have that trauma patient whose blood pressure is 40 over 20 and you haven't had imaging yet, or you can't get a good ultrasound view, and you don't know if a large hemothorax or a tension pneumothorax is the source of this patient's decompensation. And now, what I've conventionally taught is the patient should get bilateral chest tubes as a diagnostic measure. But what you could do instead is simply do bilateral finger thoracostomies. And then, if there's no efflux of air or blood from the chest, then you just slap on an occlusive dressing, continue with your primary survey, and you could go back later and just suture up that cut. If you want to throw a chest tube in there, knock yourself out. But it's not even necessary, because you've diagnosed whether anything's going on that side of the chest. Same thing for that asthmatic on the vent. They start crashing, and conventionally the teaching was put in bilateral needle decompressions. If there is no pneumothorax there and you stick a needle in, essentially the pleural space is a virtual space. The visceral and parietal pleura are basically touching each other. There's nowhere else for that needle to go than into lung tissue. you're going to cause a pneumothorax if you use needle decompression diagnostically, which is why I do not advocate doing it in this scenario number three. Do the finger thoracostomies. If there's nothing there, you could sew it up and be done, and you haven't caused a pneumothorax. Now, you might say, well, you know, this finger thoracostomy, that sounds great, but it's going to take a while because I have to get a chest tube set, and I have to put the scalpel blade on the scalpel or find a scalpel, and then I have to find that hemostat, and then, you know, this is just too much. I just want to grab the needle and go. Well, here's what you do. If you ever have to do a finger thoracostomy, forget about the chest tube set, forget about a scalpel, forget about all that crap. Just grab a suture set. Grab a suture set on that lateral chest wall, which is where you do your finger thoracostomy, fourth or fifth intercostal space, just where you put your chest tube. Swipe with your betadine or chlorhexidine. Grab a pinch of skin. Grab a between your finger and your thumb, maybe a centimeter of skin. Take the scissors out of that suture set and just cut through the skin with the iris scissors that are in every suture set. Forget about a scalpel, you don't need it. Cut through the skin with the iris scissors. Grab the little curved hemostat that's in every single suture set and use that to do your finger thoracostomy. Now, you don't need to open a chest tube set, you don't need to find a scalpel, and if there's nothing in there, if you're doing it diagnostically, have them drop a suture onto your field and sew it up with that same suture set. So now you could use that. And if you really wanted to be clever, and you have a go bag you're taking the CT scan, maybe you have some meds in there, maybe you have some intubation equipment in case the patient decompensates over there, throw a suture set in there as well, and now you don't even need to do a needle decompression at CT. You could just do a finger thoracostomy there as well. All right, I hope this is helpful. As always, if you have any questions or comments, just put them in the comments section on the show notes. And for anyone who doesn't understand, show notes are, you go to mcrit.org, you find the title of this episode and you click on it, and those are the show notes. I have a whole bunch of studies there in the show notes as well, you should take a look at. And I think that's it for this week. This is Scott Weingart for the mcrit podcast saying bye bye and happy holidays.